How do you get paid to direct? What are some things you can do today to go out and get work for yourself? How do you approach businesses cold? How do you use your network to expand your directing jobs? We're going to get into that and so much more in today's edition of The Working Director with filmmaker Katie Hunter.
This is The Working Director Podcast, a show that helps you go from emerging filmmaker to working director. As a filmmaker living in Los Angeles, I've directed over 130 projects, including 6 distributed feature films, all while helping filmmakers figure out how to level up in their careers. I do this show with one goal in mind, to help you become a working director. And if you want to join us for the live Q&A sessions and ask all of your questions, make sure you join our free private Facebook group by going to theworkingdirector.pro.
Talk to directors about this all the time. Corporate work is not the sexy work, but it is the work that pays. And it is the work that's readily available for you to go out and get the job today. It's there for you to create jobs. One of the things I teach in The Working Director is how you actually can go to business owners and just pitch them basically on making videos for them. And that's how you get a lot of work. It's not sitting around on your couch hoping that, you know, Universal is going to call you tomorrow to do the movie of your dreams. That's not how you become a working director. If it is, good luck. I mean, you've won the lottery if that's happened.
Right.
So when you want to go out and get clients now in your career, like if you're, you know, there's a lull and nothing's happening, what exactly do you have measures you take to get things moving? Or have you just found that people are always referring you at this point? So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because everybody who's working as a director kind of has to cobble together an income differently. So I know directors who are doing 4 projects a year and like they work freelance on those and that's how they pay all their bills. Personally, I do in-house corporate work. So I work a salary job in social media content creation. I get to do directing through that job a lot of the time. And then I get my freelance directing gigs through my relationships, oftentimes through the people I meet in those corporate settings. So for example, when I directed for Claire's, I met the producer who brought me onto that gig through a corporate job that I was working in-house on a salary. So it really is, you know, you can't discount the corporate work because you're meeting the most interesting people through that work, and a lot of really talented people through that work too, because the corporations have the big bucks.
Yeah. And it's always nice when you aren't worried about, so, I mean, you're always gonna have a budget to deal with, but it's not like when you're doing your own indie film. Like we just did one last month where there was never enough time, never enough money. When you're in the corporate world, you go to, you're up front, like, here's how much money we need to do this. And then you go do that. It's a much nicer system. And I think if directors would get behind that, they realize that they're working more and they're still enjoying themselves because they are still directing while on the side, you can be doing their passion project.
Well, and just the access to equipment too. Like through my corporate gigs, you know, I've met folks at Shure. I've met people who can hook me up with access to cameras and rigging that I never would have access to, or I'd have to pay for out of a production budget if I wasn't working on a corporate contract. The majority of my work is actually in short form documentary and narrative storytelling. So I've worked with a lot of like hospitals and health systems, and it's truly is like the scariest and often most dramatic time in a person's life when they're going through like a hospitalizing incident. And so everyone that's involved in that storytelling is sort of at that climactic moment. It's really fascinating for me. And so I've been able to work on the corporate side, you know, doing the marketing for these hospitals, telling the stories to kind of bring to life what they're doing there, but then also hone my storytelling skills by exploring these really emotional, like these whole narratives, which has been cool.
I want to point out what you just said, because this is something that also Jason Satterlin had said when we talked to him about these kind of gigs. Y'all, she's talking about these sort of non-exciting, for lack of a better word, job where she's honing her skills as an emotional storyteller that then transfers in to the feature narrative work. So you've got to take every little job, and instead of being like, oh, I guess I'll take this job that doesn't maybe pay as much as I want, or it's with a dentist, it's so boring, and go, what can I learn from this moment? What shots can I try to do that maybe I don't ever get to do normally? You can take all these things as opportunities. Let's talk a little bit more, though, about that, how you've transitioned some of that into narrative storytelling using social media. Because that is the thing that I feel like every single person who's watching, no matter what your job is, and I'm including myself in that, we are terrible at social media and telling our story on social media. So talk to us about how you approach say TikTok, for instance, if you're, you can maybe use a corporate client example, or maybe it's an example of how you've done your own career stuff.
Don't pitch yourself as a content creator. You'll make less money and you'll be undervalued. Pitch yourself as a director and a creative director, because you'll get access to bigger budgets. You'll get to do more exciting creative things because you'll have more trust with that title. And you know, you just, it's more reflective of the actual work that you're doing.
Yeah. And I also feel like when I'm telling filmmakers, go out to these companies and pitch, you know, doing videos for them, you never say I'm a videographer.
Right.
I always say you provide production services. You do video services. You have a production company. You always make it sound bigger than maybe you feel like you are at this moment in your career. There's been so many jobs that I have gotten in the past just by being like, yeah, my production company can handle that. Well, I'm the only person in my production company, but I have
exactly
and gaffers and grips and sound. I have all these people. So depending on the job and the rates, I can call these people. So it doesn't matter if you actually have some established place where people are showing up. That's not what it's about. It's about, can you handle the work and can you deliver on time and on budget and deliver a quality project?
Right. And do you have the vision? Because in working in these corporate settings, you know, we have a lot of folks who are specialists and folks who are editors and who are really great at those specialized skills. But what's rare are those people with the vision and the storytelling acumen that we learn from being, you know, indie film storytellers and doing our features and our more narrative work. And that's really valued in corporate America, I found. And I'll share, you know, one social media experience that was very cool was when I was at Northwestern Medicine, I was in-house on their creative team. And I built a lot of trust with their creative directors. So they would ask me to come in direct projects oftentimes. So I was working with the transplant team and we identified a woman on social media whose lifelong dream was to donate her kidney. And she was already documenting this on her TikTok. So I reached out to this woman and I asked her, you know, can we follow you? Could we go through this process with you? So this wasn't an organizational priority at the time. It wasn't like NM came to me and said, do a big video about the transplant program. I came to them with this pitch because I'd found an interesting character and I wanted to tell this story. And I knew that they had the money to make it happen. And because I worked there, I had access that nobody else had to everything behind the scenes around this storytelling. So that's the end result of that was one of my favorite short documentary films that I ever made. The level of production we were able to bring to it was only possible because I did it in-house while working at the hospital. I don't know that I could have told that story if I were, you know, just a person on my own trying to break into the walls of the hospital and say, let me direct this thing.
I get chills hearing that because that is exactly what I try to teach. And filmmakers, don't get thrown off by the fact that you already worked at the hospital. You could still take that story idea and go to somebody who had the money and the interest to make it. And just say, here, I have the story rights. I have this whole vision. We need this much budget, you know, or it's all about how you approach and having that sort of like, I can do this. I'm confident and I've got your back. I think that can get you any job, especially when you're trying to pitch these stories. But I love that you went to social media and found somebody who already was documenting it. There's already sort of a following happening. So that helps too. I've never actually thought to do that, to pick a pre-story, I guess.
Well, that's a trend I see in documentary storytelling right now, too. Like if we look at the Bama Rush documentary, like 40% of the B-roll in that documentary was from TikTok. And so I think more and more we're seeing like the true authentic feeling storytelling is happening on social media in these ways. And so as filmmakers, it's our responsibility to like respond to this new digital storytelling environment by incorporating it into the work that we're doing. So like what really interests me about the social media environment, too, is pairing like the low value UGC, you know, stuff that users are creating shot on an iPhone with the higher production stuff that we can do on the cinema cameras. And like, what does that world kind of look like?
You know, I kind of touched on it, but I really want to talk through a TikTok story, just as an example. It could be Instagram, whatever. But so let's say for our filmmakers, they want to do a story on themselves. They want to put themselves in the best light as a filmmaker. So you as a director, as the creative who now has this job, what would you tell them? Is there any advice you would give? Or first thoughts even, because I know this is, it's always based on who the person is. Maybe use yourself as an example. But what's the kind of stuff you would be posting regularly to show that you're a confident filmmaker that people should be hiring?
Oh, yes. So that's like the personal brand stuff. Yeah. And so what's interesting is my biggest social following is on TikTok, where I have over 40,000 followers right now. It's February of 2024. So hopefully more soon. But that platform's the biggest for me. And I blew up there because I posted a video of myself doing an onstage quick change back when I was an actor. It was not related to directing, right? It was pure viral content. But because I'm a good storyteller and a great editor, I put it together and told the story of what was happening in that video clip in such a smart way that it attracted a lot of attention and a lot of followers. And then those people stuck around when I explained to them what I do as a filmmaker and as a storyteller and my ideas about digital media. So I think that there's an idea that you have to niche down, or you have to start every TikTok with, I'm a director and here's what I do.
Right.
I tend to swipe right past those videos because they're not providing immediate value. So on TikTok, the first 3 to 5 seconds are the most valuable time in your video. So if you're not using that time to, I call it a thumb stopping hook, right? To stop that scroll, then you're not doing TikTok right. And my best advice for people posting on TikTok is when you have a video that you're done with and you think it's great and you're ready to post it, go sit on TikTok for 10 minutes and just scroll and watch other people's videos and then watch yours. And you'll see really quickly whether or not it fits or it doesn't. And you'll know if people are responding. TikTok's really cool too. Like, I think an advantage for me as a director coming up through social media content creation is you get instant feedback on everything. And especially in the TikTok environment, it can go so well with millions and millions of views, or it can go so poorly with like 200. And so you know instantly if you're creating content and telling a story that people are responding to, or if you need to go back and retool.
And I love that you are so confident to say, because I'm a good storyteller, because I know how to tell a story. And that is something that I feel like we grow up in this sort of like, we're supposed to be humble world. And that really hurts when you're trying to get jobs. You have to go into any job as a director, whether you're pitching for the company to hire you, whether you're going to, like, I've interviewed for feature film jobs where I just was like, I'm the right person. I don't know what else.
Yeah.
Why would you pick anybody else?
I mean,
it's not cocky. It's not ego. It's just like, in my mind, I just feel like I'm so right for this. Yeah. You know, I was job, but that is the way to do it.
I mean, it's just the facts. Like, I don't feel like I'm bragging when I explain to someone that I, you know, have a history of going viral with every client that I've worked with. I'm not bragging when I say I have 15 million views on TikTok, because I do, you know, like any man director would walk into a room and say, here are my credentials. And I think as women directors, especially, we shouldn't be afraid to say the exact same stuff and not feel bad about it.
That's right. Then from Shut the Fill Up, great name. Yeah. Any breaking the ice tips on approaching an artist, a small business organization, but wanting to shoot material for them? This is a great, great question. And I love that you put an artist, because I do think that one of the things, I'll let Katie give her intake, but one of the things I always teach is your social media network is bigger than you think. So one of the easiest things you can do right now is go on your Facebook and say, hey, my production company is trying to grow our reel. So we're willing to do, you know, 3 small videos or 3 music videos for cost. Now, they don't even know that cost could be $5,000, and that's how much it costs. It could be $200. That's your decision. But you basically just go, I'm looking for these artists. Or maybe you want to do 2 free because you don't have any. We're willing to do 2 music videos for free. And then it's such a great way to get people to start emailing you and saying, I have a band, you know, and then who knows where that leads. You got to just put out in your network. Tell everybody you know, hey, I'm looking for music videos. I want to shoot music videos. They need to know. If people don't know what you're looking for, nobody knows to think of you when that thing comes up. Now, as far as approaching them cold, Katie, do you have any advice on like walking into, say, let's say a small business and you approach them cold about wanting to shoot something for them?
I'm not usually going in cold. Like, I have a person on the inside usually. So, and it's interesting you bring up getting work through social media too, because as I'm thinking about it, most of the work that I've gotten, if it hasn't been through work that I'm doing and, you know, making relationships on set and through the project, it's been through social media or through college. And so, you know, when I think about like approaching an organization about doing a video for them, if I know somebody, even if they're not related to like the marketing team, if they're like a salesperson or if they're an admin, having that like trust that like, hey, my friend is going to come in to pitch, like gives you that extra bit of credibility before you even pitch that helps somehow. I don't know how to describe it, but they just like have that established trust with you. And then with other artists that I'm working with, this is where the corporate work has really helped, where like if there's a new audio person I want to work with, or a cinematographer whose work I've discovered on Instagram and I really love, I can usually pay them to come in and work for me at the corporate level. And so they can get a nice corporate paycheck and we can kind of get used to each other and how we like to work before we take that step of working on an indie project together where the financing is maybe a little bit more complicated, or one of us is working for free or we're trading work. Chicago is really cool because a lot of people will trade work. So we'll bring in folks for corporate work, and you work on the corporate project, and then you can go off and work together on indie films together and build those relationships. Or if you do audio on my film, I'll do light on your film. You know, it's a lot of that trading off. And then sometimes, you know, like with Second City, I was working with a film production company called Make It Up Media here in Chicago. And those were all Second City actors. And so when I went to post stuff for Second City or work with other people at Second City, I already knew a lot of people like in that network. I already had, you know, actors from Merge Actress in my shorts. And so I had built that trust within like their peers in the industry, that they sort of knew, like, we were all kind of friends with each other. And so there was more trust there when I pitched.
Another tip on breaking the ice, I do think it's always better to have any kind of friend, you know, a friend is coming in, whatever, you know, if you know somebody, it's always better. But if you are going cold, I always say pick something you already do. So say you visit the same bookstore every week, or you have a chiropractor who knows you really well. You go to your chiropractor and say, look, I'm looking to add more commercials to my my company's reel. Have you ever thought about making a commercial? And that can start a conversation because you already have sort of a warm opening because you talked to them. But let's say you've never been in a store, but you want to do a record store. Just go into there and start talking about, like, talk to the owners. Like, how are you guys doing? Like, you know, you've been here forever. How does this work? How's business? I love that you do this and that. Start establishing that rapport. Don't ask in the first thing to make a video for them. You could say that, you know, you are a director, you do a production company if you want. But it's about establishing that rapport. And then the next time you go in, you can then do the, you know, I was thinking about you guys, and I really could not stop thinking about this commercial idea for you. You guys ever thought about doing a commercial? So you already have a little bit of rapport. I find those work the best. It's never easy to go in cold. I know, but it works. And also remember that a no has never killed anybody. Okay. you can get, you know, every time you get a no, instead of letting it be like you've been rejected, just be like, great, I'm one step closer to my yes.
Right. That's the good training from acting, right? Like auditioning for a million things and getting rejected over and over. Like I can pitch and get rejected and I'm like, no problem. This slides
and
right
it is nothing. That's same as when you're asking for someone to hire you as a filmmaker. It has nothing to do with you. It's just maybe they don't understand what their video was for. Maybe they don't understand where their money would come from to shoot it. You've no idea. Maybe you gave them the idea for a video and then they realize their cousin is a videographer. So they're going to go with their cousin. Just have no idea.
Right. Yeah. Or like, especially with TikTok, like people really don't know what they're doing, even though the platform's been around for so long now. Even the big brands are like shooting things on cinema cameras that aren't performing. They need to be shooting on iPhones. Right. And so it's like when I'm pitching cold to people like that, right, like TikTok accounts, I can just come in and say, look, I see you have a TikTok account and you don't have the numbers. I do. Like, would you like to get these numbers? Like, come and work with me. So it's like, it comes back to like that proof thing, you know, like I feel more confident if I'm pitching with somebody, I don't have an ally in the room already. Like I just come with a lot of evidence. Like I'm presenting the case for why you ought to hire me.
For sure. Nothing speaks more to people than numbers, whether it's money that you've made or number, you know, how high your following is. Can people, so if anybody in this, you know, watching this now, or listening on the podcast decides they really want help with their TikTok, are you like, do people hire you to consult for that and help them with that? I know you said you're corporate focused, but.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I have my corporate in-house gig at the hospital, and then I run my own production company, Space Camp Productions. And so that is where I do all my freelance work through and my directing work through. So on social media, I ran the TikTok for the Linkin Park Zoo in Chicago for their channel launch last year, which was very cool. And they reached out to me through a work colleague at Northwestern. So they said, we need somebody who's great at TikTok. I had launched Northwestern's TikTok channel with great success. And so the zoo, when they looked for a TikTok expert, were told, go to Katie Hunter. So that's kind of like how the TikTok ball has gotten rolling. And the same thing happened with, I have an MMA fighter right now who's interested in building her TikTok presence. And that was through somebody at my corporate job said, hey, I have a friend who wants to start a TikTok. You're the expert at this. I've seen what you do. Can you come work with her? What would that look like? So I don't, you know, I kind of do like custom packages for everybody depending on what they need. Like influencers need really different things than big brands. But yeah, I mean, I've built out packages for like 2-day TikTok trainings for people to come in and be like, look, you're going to get the boot camp. And I've also done like long-term contracts where I'm sort of like their director in-house or creative director in-house for their channel for a year, however long they need me to kind of get them booted up and started. So yeah, it's a mix of different things in the social media world, just kind of whatever people need.
Actually, I'm going to talk to Katie offline about trying to get her to do a 2-day boot camp for Blackmagic. So we'll get back to that. But I think, you know, hiring Katie to teach what she knows about this TikTok and going viral and making the videos and what works and doesn't work would be a great investment for anybody, because then you can take this information and go do it for other people. And now you're doing exactly what she's doing. You're getting hired to go be the director production company for businesses, influencers, et cetera. And there's no better way to be a working director than to have clients, people who want to hire you. We have a question here that's basically, you know, do you have any advice for writer director and they're getting their scripts from the right person or producer? And the reason I don't teach that, which we can touch on, but the reason we don't teach that is because that is not how you become a working director. You become a working director by being proactive and going out and working. And every feature film I've gotten is because I was working, doing other things and got referred to it somehow or another. It was never because, except for the last ones that got taken away during the pandemic, I did apply to those. But normally you don't just apply. You don't, you know, it's not someone else taking your script. It's you getting referred by other people that you've worked with. How do you become a working director? You go work. And that's these unsexy jobs that we're talking about.
It's true. Yeah. And it's like, it's not like I'm coming up with my passion project and pitching it to people. It's that I hear about work and I find my passion in that work. And I choose to do the project because I have the passion. I was on a panel with Dave Pasquese at IO for my web series Rideshare, which was like an improvised comedy show about like Lyft and Uber drivers. It was wild. But Dave Pasquese said on that show that when he picks projects, he says people, project, and pay. And you have to have 2 out of 3. So is the pay good? Are the people good? And is the project good? And if you don't have 2 out of 3, then I'm probably not going to work on that project.
I think that's a great rule to follow. But I would even go further to say, I don't care how good the pay is. If the people suck, I'm out. And I've learned that the hard way. But I will touch on that answer for you when you asked about how to get the scripts in front of the right people. Again, it just goes back to networking. The people have to know you. I get submitted, I'm sure you do, Katie, as well, just random people email all the time. Here's my script. And I'm like, yes, and
right. What do you want me to do? I'll read it, but like that's coverage. Like, I don't know what you want.
I don't have time to read it. And the thing is, unless I'm actively looking, even when I'm actively looking, don't submit the thriller. You didn't find out anything about me. So you're submitting me a thriller. It makes me show you didn't look at my production company. You didn't look at me up or anything. So you need to know who you're trying to get to see that. This goes for getting work as well. When you're trying to get clients, like, who are you talking to? What do they care about? What are their passions? And then that's who you go after. And that's who you make friends with. And yes, you make friends with the people that you want to read your script, and don't ask your friend to read your script. Instead, you make friends until they go, let me read your script. I'd love to read your script. Now, there are people out there who will say, Jen, that's weeny and you should just make the bold ask. And those people have had success with the bold ask. I find the bold ask turns people off more than it will help you. Katie, maybe you've had different experience with that.
I mean, I find if somebody's sending me their script, you know, in that we're usually paying to make it. You know what I mean? And I'm usually not just directing. I'm helping them source a producer and I'm having to do all this other stuff. So, yeah, my preferred way is like, let's go get a drink and talk about a cool idea that you have. And let's expand on that idea together and talk about the people that we mutually know in our network who could bring that idea to life. Like when you send me a script, you're like locked into something and like you've already thought of this whole world. And like, I don't really have. I don't know, like you have already made a lot of decisions at that point. And maybe haven't worked together before and I don't know you very well. And so like, I don't have a way in. But if we just chat for a while and to kind of learn about each other and learn about what we're interested in, we might come up with something even better or cooler ways to expand on that story. And that's what would really interest me in working on the project.
Everybody you're sending your script to probably already has 6 scripts in the pipeline they're trying to get done that are theirs. So why yours? You have to always remember, why yours? And what are you going to do to convince me that yours is the one and not, oh, but the story is so unique, because it's probably not. And even though it may be amazing and maybe the best script, maybe an Oscar winner, but telling me the story is different is not going to be it. Like there has to be some more to it. Okay, we're almost out of time, but I want to get to this question because it is a good question that I've asked a lot. Barack, he says, how do you do rates for your gigs? I have a very specific, very easy way for new filmmakers to figure that out. But Katie, how do you price out gigs, your rate as a director?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So first, I asked all my friends what they were charging to do different things. And working in-house, we hire a lot of freelancers. So I got to see a lot of rate cards, like what's a DP charging with this amount of experience? What's a sound person charging with that amount of experience? So I got a sense of scale for what was going on in my region in Chicago for this type of production. So that helped me ballpark it. But then for each project, I tend to look at the size of the organization. I'll ask around, like if I know a producer on it, if they know the overall budget for the project, if that's already established, like with Claire's, I said, you know, like I was asking, like, how much is the creative director? Do you know their day rate? Like, kind of trying to understand and ask people I know how much are other people being paid to get an idea of the budget for the whole project. With Porchlight, they were a really small theater company in Chicago. And like here in Chicago, the storefront community, storefront theater was huge before the pandemic, but it got devastated when we all shut down for 2 years. So coming back online has been really hard for them. And so I knew going into pitching a docuseries for this theater company that they wouldn't have a lot of money to spend on it. So I really judiciously thought about my own rates and the budget I would need to bring the project to life and kind of like adjusted things on both sides because I knew that this was like a passion project for me. It was a people project for me. So I knew I could move on the pay a little bit. And there were sometimes if there's certain production things I want to do on a project, I will lower my directing rate to get more budget on the production side because I know it's something I want in my portfolio. So it's sort of like a dance and a negotiation with every different person.
I always say, how bad do you want it? So if the pay is crap, but you really want it and you know it's going to be good for your people or good for your education or good for who you're working with, whatever it is, sometimes you'll just take the crap pay. But one way I come up with when you're a new filmmaker and like, or you're like new to asking for money, one thing I tell you to do is budget out your whole month. How much money do you need to make in a month? Now, let's say you need $2,500 to make all of your bills and have some food at the end of the month. Okay. The project you're taking on is going to take up 5 days. That's a week, right? So 2,500 divided by five, that's your weekly rate. And you will not work for less than that because you need to make that much per week. It's not exact science, but it is a way for you to kind of figure out what your time is worth or what you need to do in that time. And you also can start charging more as you go, which is nice. Like the first time you're scared. I had a working director student who the first time she only asked for $5,000 for something. And then I was like, you need to ask twice that. And she got it the second time. Get comfortable getting paid. I think that's the thing.
Right. And like budgets in film production are so different than like budgets other places in life sometimes. And so it just asking for money in that context feels different than talking about like my rent or my grocery budget. You know what I mean? So you just have to get comfortable talking about really big numbers and you have to be confident enough to know that you can handle those big numbers on your project because you're going to manage those budget numbers well.
And that's the thing I was going to say too, when it comes to the money, a lot of times you talk to these people who you're going to say the small business, and they say, yes, I totally want to do a video. How much would it cost? You can't give them, don't throw out a number. Just say, you know, we can do things on different budgets, but let's understand what you need. Because if they just want like them sitting in a chair talking about the store, maybe you can do that for with you and a camera and $200. But if they want this whole thing with coverage and a storyline and all this stuff, and you can show them proposals, you can show them why the money costs a certain way, because not most people do not understand film budgets. You could tell someone, like, you know, the film I just shot was $15,000 for one day. And someone would go, oh my God, that's so much money. But in the real world, that's not near enough money for one day. So it's just a matter of making people understand this is what people get paid. Here's the, you know, you gotta help them along the way sometimes. Okay, we are out of time and I'm going to get to these really brief answers on these. So just wrote and directed a long form PSA for a nonprofit that I work at. Would like to go out for more gigs in the nonprofit space. Yes, you should start with friends who work in that sector.
Like my Emmy nominated project this year was a documentary, Chicago Emmy nominated project this year. I was nominated for directing, which was really cool. My first nomination. I did that with Porchlight. And then it was like, because we got the nomination for it and because they saw this, the audience response from the video the first time around, we got like messages from people who came to see the show saying like the video enhanced the experience so much, you know, the positive response meant that we got to do the next documentary series about the next musical that they did. So it's like doing good work begets good work.
I won't read this very long thing, but there's a whole thing about a lot of disappointments because there was verbal promises that didn't get followed through on. And she said, does this happen a lot? And I say, it happens every time you don't get it in writing. Like everything's in writing from minute one. I don't care if they're your best friend. I don't care if it's your mom. Everything is in writing from the minute you're moving forward. And I'm sure Katie has horror stories of her past not doing that as well. But I mean, if you don't need to throw on, but I contracts in writing. Verbal means nothing.
Oh, yeah. People who know me know what I'm thinking about with my eyes real big reading this comment. Like, this happens all the time. Yeah, you just have to protect yourself. Like, Christopher Diaz was my playwriting mentor. He is working on the book for the Alicia Keys musical that's coming to Broadway this year. He's like an incredible playwright. And he told me that in this business, you have to be like Jay-Z. You have to be like a business-minded person. You can't just be a creative. And especially for directors, like, even more so than when I was an actor, even more so than I was a playwright, like, I feel like I need an MBA some days in this business, because it's like, yeah, you got to get it in writing. You got to do your taxes. You got to know the business side of things.
Manage production budgets.
You don't get to be the great creative unless you have the business side like locked down.
Yes. And you will get hired more as a director if you understand the business side. Even if you have a line producer who's phenomenal and doing all the budget stuff, the fact that you understand how budgets work and that you're asking for things within your budget and you're not being a whiny person who wants more than your budget is going to get you hired more and more as well. But yes, everything needs to be in writing. I feel like we've been talking like this because there's so much to talk about and not enough time.
Right.
We are so out of time, but you guys have been great. Thank you for staying tuned and asking such great questions. Katie, thank you for amazing answers. And yes, everybody, I will be trying to, you know, finesse her into this 2-day boot camp. So we'll see what happens. Keep an eye on the newsletter to see if we can get her into that. And follow her on TikTok in the meantime and learn from that.
Thanks for listening to the Working Director Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please rate and review as it helps others find the show and helps us keep making great content for you. And if you want even more help with your directing career, check out theworkingdirector.pro, where you can apply to be part of the accelerator that hones in on where you currently are and helps you get to where you want to be. Whether it's this podcast, the accelerator, or our free Facebook community for directors, we're here to help you get to work.